All right, hello everybody. It's Chris Block here with Al Simaglia back again. We finally made it back to do another one of these. It is Puck Chatter Radio, thethirdmanin.com, whatever. For historical purposes, it is Thursday, January 26, 2023. It is in the middle of the afternoon. The Blackhawks play Calgary tonight, right?
Yep.
Sounds right.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't care. I really don't care.
I just heard it on the radio. That's why I knew.
I mean, we said this before for people that didn't listen to the last podcast. They're completely uninteresting, the Blackhawks. There's no reason to watch them. I have seen some games. Full disclosure, I am a Blackhawks season ticket holder. I've been for many, many, many years. I still go to some games. I don't watch them all, even when I'm there. But I've seen some Blackhawks hockey this year. And I've watched far more Rockford because I find at least Rockford's a little somewhat interesting. You know, like there's obviously Lucas Reichel's there. Isaac Phillip is now back there. He played Rockford's in a bit of a rough way right now. They've lost five in a row. They're not scoring. They haven't been scoring for a while. Lucas Reichel isn't scoring while he's there anyway. But I do find them to be the more interesting of the two. I mean, there could be something that develops out of Rockford. There isn't much in Rockford, to be honest with you. You know, like there's – on the defensive side, obviously there's Phillips. He's an interesting player. Alec Regula is a mess. I mean, he's not really – I mean, there's stuff there. I mean, they should be trying to develop him, and it looks like they are. Like, he plays a lot. He plays in situations he really shouldn't play in, but they don't really have another choice, I guess. But, I mean, the offensive end of it is there with Regula to an extent. He has bad instincts. He's most impressive when he's carrying the puck, but, I mean, when he's doing that, other people aren't, you know, he doesn't involve other people. And in the defensive zone, his footwork is terrible. He doesn't have very good lateral movement, and he has bad instincts. So, I don't know. Take your pick.
So he's good to watch when he's skating with the puck. Everything else sucks.
Yeah, kind of.
Did I screw that up?
I think that might have been what I said.
Right. Time to move forward. All right.
Yeah. Alex Vlasic, composed, definitely for his size. He's a very good skater. You give him time, but bad passer. I mean, he made an awful pass the other night. I'm trying to think. There were a lot of bad Rockford passes in the last couple of days. Over the course of this podcast, like, we got sidetracked already. I do want to say we got a decent amount of feedback. I'd say I heard from like seven or eight people about the last podcast that we did, but I don't know. I think it was right before Thanksgiving. Some good criticism. It's fair. I mean, full disclosure, I titled that podcast before we did it. It was Which Way to the Rebuild. And the intention was to talk about Which Way to the Rebuild, which is a reference to when do they start rebuilding. I mean, we're still, and here we are 2 months later. They're not doing anything is my point. I mean, I don't see anything happening in front of me that suggests that they're really rebuilding anything. It's really in this phase where nothing's happening. And it's kind of, as a fan, if you're fanatical about the Blackhawks, it's sort of it's a weird time because there's nothing really to root for. You're kind of rooting against the team, but you're still a fan. I don't know. Here's the thing, Al, and I'll let you chime in. When I'm at Blackhawks games, there are, I would say, 75% of the people there don't have a freaking clue about the tank. I would say, like, they're aware that the Blackhawks are bad, but these aren't people that are like really fresh up and knowledgeable about what's going on with the Blackhawks in the day to day. I think generally speaking, they know that the team's bad and they're rebuilding. But, you know, I mean, that Edmonton game that started at 8:30, I can't tell you how many people I overheard, why is this game starting at 8:30? Like, what? Like, it's like, well, it was a Wednesday and it was the TNT game, the national game. Like, but they had no idea that they, you know, like, oh, people would, like, do you think the Hawks are going to be able to rebound and do something this year? No, I don't think so. I think that, and if they do, that'll be put to a stop real quick. And you saw it with Lucas Reichel. But
so that's like 10,000 out of the 15,000 that are actually there fall into that kind of like happy to be here. We don't really care. I mean, if so, I mean, that's good for the front office.
It's great for them. I mean, we've talked about this before. I think this season couldn't have played out more perfectly for the Blackhawks. They got off to a decent start. And I have some notes here about you. Yeah, okay, you asked me a question. I'll get to that in a second. The season couldn't have started off better, and then they went in the hole. But like I mean, we know what they're doing. They're tanking, and it's the whole purpose is to get Bedard, hopefully. And if you don't, maybe get the second or third pick. But that's the whole purpose of this season, is to be as bad as you possibly can be to make the draft picks as foolproof as possible. That's the purpose. And the season couldn't have really, to this point, panned out more perfectly than that. But one of the things when I'm at games and I'm thinking to myself, okay, for the people who are on board with the tank, why are you rooting for the Blackhawks to win? Like, I get it that you're a fan, but if you're truly on board with the tank, like, you want Bedard, right? When the Hawks score, why are you cheering? When the Hawks win, why are you happy? Like, I understand sports fanaticism in a way, but I also, it's so nonsensical. It's so stupid. It really is. You're born in a city and suddenly the team in another city sucks and you hate them. It's so stupid. But like, why aren't you?
This is just an uncomfortable year all the way around, though. I mean,
why aren't you?
It just adds to it.
To lose when they get scored against. This is what I would love. I would love when the Hawks get scored against for the United Center, just cheer, stand up and cheer in unison. Partly because I want this organization to be so embarrassed by what they're doing that they never fucking do it again. And, you know, I know, like, it's not about the rebuild. The people, like, of course the Blackhawks need to rebuild. Of course they need a bunch of draft picks. Of course they need to develop the next roster. Of course they do. That's not the point. You can have all the draft picks you want. You could draft, but you're still going to have to develop a whole bunch of other players. And that was my point with which way to the rebuild. When do they start developing players? I watch what they're doing with Lucas Reichel and Rockford. I don't care what they say. I don't care what Kyle Davidson says. I care what they're doing. When Kyle Davidson last week, when they sent Lucas Reichel down and they said, well, it's going to benefit Lucas Reichel to play center in Rockford in games that matter and in all different situations. That's what he said. Al, do you know how much center Lucas Reichel has played since Davidson made that comment?
Well, I would say probably 85%.
No, not even. He's the half of the time.
Not even.
Half of the time that he's been in Rockford this last week, half of the time he's played wing on Cole Gutman's line. Reichel hadn't played wing all season in Rockford. Not one game did he play wing. Kyle Davidson says his reasoning for sending Reichel down after Reichel has those three impressive games, everybody's writing these articles, oh, he's NHL ready. They did the right thing in developing him. Like, he's ready to go. Davidson sends him down, says, well, it's going to be important for him to play center in Rockford. And then he doesn't fucking play center. This is
Well, he's got to be on, like, the penalty kill, hasn't he? Isn't he on the penalty kill?
No, he hasn't played the penalty kill all year okay? And, I mean, he'll, like, somebody will say to me, Chris, he's got penalty kill minutes. Yeah, he's got the garbage minutes at the end of the penalty kill when, with 10 seconds left, the penalty the Rockford clears the zone, dumps the puck down all the way, and then Sorensen is resetting his lines, getting ready for that guy to jump out of the box. Those are the penalty kill minutes that Reichel has, those last 7-8 seconds. He does not play the penalty kill. And I'll tell you another thing, and because it's fresh in my mind because I just watched this game yesterday. So Saturday, Rockford lost again. I mean, they've lost four in a row now, I think, maybe five. But anyway, they played at home against the Chicago Wolves. They get blasted 6-2. A night after, they got blasted by Springfield, who is one of the worst teams out east. It's the Blues farm team, I think, now, isn't it? I don't know. Matthew Hymar's on that team. So in the first period, the Rockford's down 1-0. Now, remember, this is the context. Kyle Davidson said it's important for Lucas Reichel to go down and play center on a contending team in important games in all different situations, right? He jumps the boards. The Wolves are up 1-0, eight-some minutes into the first period. Lucas Reichel goes out. The Wolves have just scored, so they're down 1-0. He goes out to center. He takes a face-off. Now I'm going to losing my place. So Suzuki on the Wolves takes a faceoff at center. He loses the faceoff. No big deal. Okay. Defensive zone draw 10 seconds later, 20 seconds later against Suzuki again. He loses that draw. There's a quick whistle. Sorensen pulls Michael Tepley off Lucas Reichel's line. I'll get to that in a second too. Pulls Michael Tepley off. He puts Cole Gutman on. Now Cole Gutman is a really nice – he's a nice player. First year, finished his collegiate season at Denver. This is his rookie year. He's sort of a jack-of-all-trades. He's the best face-off guy the Rockford Ice Dogs have. Sorensen pulls Tepley off the ice, puts Gutman on so Cole Gutman can take this draw. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm thinking, all right, he's not wanting to go down 2-0. Reichel's not great at draws. Can someone please tell me what the fuck it is that Yannick Perreault does? Because unless it's somebody who's adopted Yannick Perreault's way of taking faceoffs. If you remember, Perreault was the guy that was really choked down on his bottom hand. That was his style. For guys that go with that style, Cole Gutman's one of them. Philip Deneau, they tend to be pretty successful under Yannick Perreault. Taves sort of adapted that too.
He gets a guy every 4 or 5 years, just long enough to stick around.
But he's just I don't know what Yannick Perreault does. And I would love for somebody to reach out to me and tell me, okay, Chris, you're wrong about it. I'll admit I'm wrong. I've done it a couple of times. But I just like that. What the fuck is it that this guy does? Because the Rockford's always bad at faceoffs. The Blackhawks are generally bad at faceoffs outside of Jonathan Toews. So, but Gutman's good. So Sorensen sends Gutman out there. Gutman wins the draw. And then the rest of the period, he steers clear. Reichel has one more draw in the period, which I think he won. I don't know. I have notes here somewhere. I took notes. I know. Here we go. I found my notes.
I think that's your problem. You're taking notes.
I got lots of notes.
You got to wing it.
I got lots of notes. Okay. So, Reichel took one more of that period. But then in the second period, he takes Reichel off center and puts him on wing on Cole Gutman's line. And that's where Reichel stays the rest of the game. Okay. Now, the Wolves did go up 2-0. So the rest of the game, Reichel plays wing. He was supposed to go there to play center. Now he's playing wing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm thinking to myself, all right. So I go back and I was because I watch some of these games out of order sometimes. I go back and I watch the game prior, which is the Springfield game. And I didn't get all the way through this game because it was a rough watch. But at some point, you know, when they're losing like big, it doesn't matter. Like, you got to stop watching because you're not really going to see too much. Because a lot of some players, like, that's when they excel, is when there's no pressure, right? That's why you really got to be careful when if the third period the game's out of hand and all of a sudden, oh my God, look at how good this guy's playing. Well, there's no pressure. I mean, the game's out of hand, it doesn't mean anything. You're not learning a whole lot. You can learn some things, but maybe not a lot. So go back. And Anders Sorensen's, they had interviewed Anders Sorensen, I guess, before the game, the new Rockford Ice Hawks play-by-play guy, who I have news, I can shed light on that in a second, too.
What's his name?
He's pretty good. He actually sounds a little bit he sounds a little bit like Joey Z. He's pretty good. So before the game, they talk about, he talks his pregame chat with Anders Sorensen, and Sorensen is asked about the lineup changes and that Reichel had been moved down to effectively the third line. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he's centering Dylan Sakura and Michael Tepley. Okay. Now, third line in Rockford, does it mean a whole heck of a lot? No, they're just basically rolling lines. Like, there's not a whole lot of like, oh, you know, this is, we want to get this matchup or defensive zone draw against the other team's top line. Like, there's some of that, but for the most part, they're just rolling lines. You know, if the game gets tight or you're chasing the game, the fourth line will sort of fall off, you know, in the third period or whatever. But for the most part, they're just rolling lines. But anyway, he's on the third line with Michael Tepley and Dylan Sakura. So Mike Folta asked him, I give him credit for asking it. Maybe he'll not ask these questions as much in the future, but he's asked if what went into that. And Anders Sorensen said, well, we wanted to get Dylan Sakura and Michael Tepley going. So that's why Lucas Reichel is there, to get Tepley and Sakura going. That's the reason why he's in Rockford. This is my point. I don't care what they're saying. I care what they're doing. When the season began, I didn't have a problem with Lucas Reichel being a Rockford, because you can pick apart Reichel's game and say, well, okay, you know, this right here, he could do a little bit better. But the main thing that still you'll see from time to time, it was more glaring earlier in the year, is his last step. When he has – it's like his problem has never been like getting the puck into the zone with speed. His problems are that last step sometimes he hesitates. Like, what I mean about that is, like, he'll have a step on a defender, or he'll be, you know, sort of like just inching by a defender, and he just needs to take that one last drive to the net to either force that defender to take him down and draw a penalty, or he could get that step and get a little bit of space so he can get off a better shot. Sometimes he's a little bit hesitant in those situations. The other things are really kind of like he's just developing bad habits. I don't think it was a bad thing for him to be there. It's just, again, what are the situations you're putting him out there in? Are you putting him in positions to fail so he learns from that? And they're not doing that. They're like, he's never been on the PK.
Which is not putting him into a position to succeed ultimately. The way he can.
Right.
The way he can.
People that think of, like, as a most professional athletes don't need to be coddled. They've gotten to where they are at a pro level because they are mentally tough to a degree. They don't need to be, oh, well, we don't want to discourage him or break his confidence. Like, that's not really a thing. That's people on the outside looking in that are sort of putting themselves in that position and thinking that they would need, their confidence would need to be, you know, coddled. Like, they don't need that. They need to be challenged, and they need to learn from succeeding and failing in different situations. And they're not doing that with him. And that's the same thing they've done with prospect after prospect after prospect. And I'd be more comfortable with Reichel if they would do those things. if they're not going to do those things, he should be in Chicago, because the problem with Reichel and Rockford is Rockford doesn't play with enough pace. So he doesn't have anybody who can skate with him. I mean, he's back with – so Luke Philp got called up. And Luke Philp, who got called up the day after one of the worst turnovers that I've ever seen, 2 days after. He got called up on Monday. One of the worst turnovers I've ever seen that led to another Chicago goal. He got called up, but he's playing well, and it was his turn. And he's a Calgary guy, and they're in Calgary tonight. So it's sort of – It kind of makes sense. But so Reichel, with Philp gone, Reichel's back at center, and he's between Gust and Cini. And I know a lot – I mean, people that sort of look at the stat sheets and stuff think that, wow, that's – you know, that's – they've been together the whole season. They haven't. I mean, Reichel – because I have all this stuff here because I'm a nerd. Reichel, Gust, and Cini – have so far this season, they've played on the same line together 12 out of 40 games. And it's a good line. Obviously, it's your three best offensive players. Reichel hasn't torn it up as much as you would think on that line. Even strength-wise, in 12 games, he has 2 goals and 6 assists with those guys. Reichel gets points no matter who he plays with. I think that might have been why Sorensen said, well, I got to get him with Tepley and Sakura because, you know, he'll get those guys going. But, you know, again, I don't want to keep going.
If I may, the reason that – and it's good – I was being facetious early. I know earlier I'm not a good straight man. I know Reichel wasn't playing center as much as he should or much at all. I know that he wasn't really – a penalty killer or put into position into different game situations where he would learn and grow and all of that because of you. You watch it closely. Most people don't watch it closely. No one really covers it to the degree you're talking about. The reason that we've spent 15 minutes on this stuff is because that all has to do with rebuilding a team. And you know, we're not being just looking to be smart asses about saying, when's it going to start? The point is, you're not rebuilding anything unless you could develop players. They haven't developed players. They've gotten fortunate drafting some players that could come basically right up and be very good. But they really, when I say they haven't developed anyone, I mean, we've talked about 1,000 times, they haven't really developed a really good NHL defenseman that stayed with them since Chalmerson. They don't develop the forwards that they did develop. They either lost patience with, or they had to get rid of because of cap situations or whatever. The point being, there's so much angst and, you know, are they going to be finished last, whatever. I think they went about this the wrong way. I'll stick with that. I think they have to get lucky to finish last because they didn't approach Kane and Taves in the summer or get rid of – they needed to get rid of another player. DeBrincat would have been the last guy to trade. But because of the situation where they wanted to – maybe it was a fan thing, a ticket thing, whereby maybe Davidson couldn't trade them or couldn't even approach them or whatever – they made a big mistake by trading a young guy who's a stud that they shouldn't have gotten rid of. And as you've talked about over the last month or so, if they're lucky enough to get Bedard, Brinkett's the perfect complementary player for him.
Yeah,
so
real quick. If
go ahead.
If
you finish up.
If
I'm
you're
sorry.
Somebody, like, here's the thing. Like, I refuse to believe that trading DeBrincat was the way to go. It may have been the way to go because Davidson was told that he absolutely no, you can't trade Kane and Taves. We may someday learn that that was the reason why he started with DeBrincat or Hagel.
But I still wouldn't have done it.
I still wouldn't have done it either. And excuse me. And if you're a fan and you watch that World Juniors tournament, there's a few things that stood out to me. I don't follow like the non-NHL, like the amateur guys. I haven't been able to follow it. I haven't been able to watch much of it. But I watched a lot of that World Junior tournament. And I got to tell you, two things stood out to me. Number one, the gap between Connor Bedard and everyone else is far greater than we were led to believe. Okay? That's number one.
It's
number two.
It's like stepping off a cliff. It might be.
Number two, you're right. Number two, you watch Connor Bedard play. If you're all in for Bedard and you're in on the tank and you're rooting for that number one pick and you're watching Bedard play, why are you not pissed off that the Hawks traded DeBrincat? Because Bedard will step in on day one, and if he had DeBrincat to play with, you're off and running. You're off and running. Like it's just
that,
oh,
for the next 10 years, you're off and running.
Hey, Bedard, if they end up with the first pick and they get Bedard, then great success. Like the tank was a success. But they have what, a 20% chance of getting him, and you do need to finish last. There was some discourse, and I want to get to some of these hot topics too. We got so much to cover, we don't have a lot of time. But one of the things that was said last, I was perusing the Twitter, and there was a debate about, I think it was the Chuggos that did it. That was like, I don't mean to be disparaging. It's CHGO Chicago, but they'll forever be Chuggos to me. That if the Blackhawks don't get Bedard, is the tank a failure? Now, I think that the thing I saw was actually Cheer the Anthem that said, I think it's Jim that runs that Twitter account. Mm-hmm. Cheer the Anthem is an old Blackhawks blog. But that if you finish first and you lose the lottery and you end up with the second or third pick, that's just bad luck. But if you finish third and you lose the lottery and end up pick with, you know, four or five, then yes, it absolutely is a failure. Like the whole point of this, Kyle Davidson assembled the team to be bad. So if it's not bad enough, well, there we go. If it's not bad enough, then it's a failure. Go ahead.
Well, it's the thing about it is, and from the beginning, and I don't go by what a lot of people say, and I don't watch these prospects often enough, okay? But it's obvious. I mean, unless he's fooling the world, he is such an elite player, Bedard. He's a franchise player. Now, the person who runs Central Scouting said a while ago, and I think I've said this before, there might be 4 to 6 more players who are all-star caliber at some point, very good, but they're nowhere near as good. Now, Fantilli gets pumped up maybe because local, whatever, because he's a big guy. I'm always cautious with the big guy that seems to be good, who is good, that people think is going to get better. Sometimes the big guy who's good doesn't excel at the same level that other players were because now he's going to be playing against other big guys. That's just over the years, you know. That's something that I've noticed. I'm a little bit cautious, but he looks like a fine player, might be a very good player. But let me just say this. Bedard is so good. He's a 2005 birth date. Fantilli and Carlson, who are now second and third, third and second in some of these things. TSN had an article the other day. They're 2005 birth dates. They're like, both are late 2004 born 18-year-olds to Bedard's 2005 birth date. He doesn't turn 18 until July. He is so much better than everyone else at this point. It's not even close. It's not even worth wasting your breath. More so, my contention was they needed to get rid of more than DeBrincat, Jones, Kane. 2 of the 3 had to go to try to ensure yourself getting to the bottom, not relying on luck so much. And that's my point with this. Now you're in a position where you need luck. Because if they don't get injuries, or he's unable to get rid of Kane and Taves, or they don't want to go, Now you're stuck with maybe trading a player that you could see maybe someone that could be here for a few years at a decent amount of money, Jake McCabe, and who's playing pretty well with Seth Jones. So now Davidson's in a position where he has to get lucky, because if he doesn't get Bedard, in my view, you can't justify in any sense trading DeBrincat. Other people disagree. That's fine. But you can't justify it. I don't care if Korchinski, whatever. I mean, it doesn't add up for me.
The worst thing that could happen is that they wind up with a third pick. I mean, you wind up with a second pick. I mean, you're going to get a really good player. I mean, I'm not – like, these guys aren't bums.
You're going to have a choice of probably – you'll have a choice of three players that should be well above average. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but I have to say this because it all melds in to what you just were talking about. Those are young guys who may not be able to come right up and play. I mean, it's pretty obvious to me that Lucas Reichel is too good for the AHL. If people don't understand what I'm saying, I have a difficult time watching AHL games because I've watched thousands of NHL games. I watch a handful of AHL games. It's a slower, much slower, deliberate style of play. Some players look better than they are. Others, it doesn't help as much. If you have the developmental process in place, it's worth getting the seasoning there. But, like, for example, if you draft Fantilli or Carlson, they may very well need to go to the AHL when they're eligible to go there. So it's a developmental thing. The player who's interesting, if he dropped far enough, would be worth trying to take a shot and making a trade to get, is the Russian, Mishkov. Because from what was said from the beginning, the only one that really justifies some sort of comparison to Bedard is Mishkov. But he can't come for 3 years. So if you miss the number two, those two players by chance, now you're in a pickle. Because by right, you probably should take a chance on the Russian. But he's not coming for 3 years.
Well,
I think he signed for 3 years. So what is it, two more years then?
It's two more years, but two things. When I watch what they're doing with Reichel, I don't know what they think. But by what they're doing, I mean, there's a strategy involved from Davidson. So what no one's really reported on, no one said, is one of the reasons why he's keeping Reichel down there is because he's made up his mind that he wants Reichel to play in the AHL postseason. Okay, if Rockford makes it there, Rockford's going to have. I mean, they're not looking good right now, but they've got a tough schedule. They've got a lot of games with the teams that they need to be better than. Manitoba, Iowa, the two teams directly in front of them. Chicago's not going away. The Wolves are going to make a surge. They've got four games left with the Wolves. They've got some games, I think four games left with Grand Rapids. They play a heavy divisional schedule. I think Rockford only has eight different opponents this year. Maybe 10. I don't remember. And they've got games with Texas, who's the best team in their division. And Milwaukee is a good team as well. Their next game is against Milwaukee on Friday night. But they may not make the playoffs. But that's obviously what he's doing here. He wants Reichel to play in the postseason, which means that Reichel can't play half of the season with the Blackhawks because it's sort of an unwritten rule that you don't do that. You don't take a guy who's an NHL player for weeks and weeks and weeks. And then at the AHL clear day deadline, which is the day or the week after the NHL trade deadline, send him down, like those paper transactions. You don't qualify him for the AHL postseason if he's an NHL player. You just don't do that. So
explain that again. Say that again, though. Teams that have a player that they brought up and played a good portion of the year, close to half the year, are now on the roster, usually in the second half of the year at least, and the team isn't making the playoffs, it's looked down, it's frowned upon to send them back down so they could be eligible for the AHL playoff. That's
right. You don't
Yeah, that has a lot to do with the fact that Reichel's down there, wouldn't you say?
Well, absolutely. It's the reason why they rushed to send him down there, because it would. Yeah, it's just, you just don't do that. You don't, like, so if they
didn't they do some of that, Chris? Didn't they do some of that, Chris, in the last year at Colleton?
Well, those were veterans, though. I mean, those were
like, older players that they stocked. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Cody Franson. I mean, they, you know, those were contracts that they were burying in Rockford.
It was
Clendenning. Clendenning's back on the ice.
Yeah, you're right.
Actually, Alec Regula, now that I mentioned it, Alec Regula, I would compare him to Adam Clendenning. Like, good offensively, definitely a nice guy to have around in an AHL sense. But the footwork, the skating's just not there. But getting back to what I was thinking with Reichel, it's like when I watch how they deploy him, how they use him, my gut says that one of the reasons why they don't put him in positions to fail is because they don't want scouts to see him fail. You know, there's a lot of – obviously there's scouts that are watching him all the time. And to your point, I think they could trade him. I think Reichel could be a part of a deal come the NHL draft. He's got two things working against him. He's not Kyle Davidson and Norm McIver's draft pick. And every time somebody spends too much time in Rockford, their game gets picked apart and they just fall out of love with the player. And those are the two things that he's got working against him. So I think that's a very good possibility. And your point about Michkov, it could be like if Michkov really falls, because obviously he's a Russian, he's got 2 years left on his deal with the KHL, that's a problem. But if you read what scouts are saying, he's the only comparable to Connor Bedard in the draft. So my point before about the worst thing that could happen to the Blackhawks is they wind up with the third pick. Because in that third pick, I mean, I think people believe that it's going to be Fantilli going second. Somebody could surprise
Fantilli
you
or Carlos.
Yeah, I mean, I guess those someone two. Could surprise, because Fantilli's he's a center, but he's a shooter. He's not a passer. So by the time we get there, there might be an argument about whether Fantilli's a forward or a wing. You know, Winton Blackhawks fans just love to have that. So maybe Carlson ends up going second in the end. If Fantilli drops to third and the Hawks are third, I think they'd be happy to draft Fantilli. But if it becomes a thing of Carlson or Michkov, that's a tough thing, because do you pass on a player like that skill level? You may not get him for 2 years, but that's going to be, and that TSN article that you referenced, it said in there that that's going to have to be an ownership decision, most likely, of whether you draft Michkov, knowing that you may not get him for 2 or 3 years. But once you do get him, he's going to jump right into the NHL. From a Blackhawks perspective, can they wait 2 years for a player like that? Or
your point is well taken, but here's the thing. There's the urgency starts here if they draft Bedard. Because if they don't draft Bedard, I think it's just, in a way, I'm sure, I'm positive that Davidson wants to draft Bedard. But if he doesn't, it buys him more time. Because those other two kids are 18 years old, so they could play in the AHL. Again, I don't see the infrastructure improving here. They may like Sorensen, but I don't see anything to get excited about in the way of developing young players again. So they're going to get two that are probably better than the second and third picks in a lot of years, maybe. You can make that case, maybe. But, you know, a lot of stuff happens with these guys. You know, I still think, I wish I tweeted Shane Malloy today, the percentage of players who play 200 games that are drafted in the first round, I don't know if it was 47 or 54%. I might be thinking wrong or confused. It's been a while since I've heard it. It's probably been a few years. But let's just say it's 50%. I mean, 90% of those players play in the NHL. Kyle Beach never did. And I think we'll be seeing the 11th pick. But the point is that it puts them in a position where now they got to get lucky. They got to pick the right second or third guy because there could be a huge difference. And then the Michkov thing. The thing where I'm thinking they would throw maybe a Lucas Reichel in the mix is if Michkov drops and there's an uncertainty surrounding him politically, otherwise, and you know what? He's playing against men now, and he's not a giant, but his skill level is supposed to be off the charts. So I wouldn't be surprised if they traded Reichel then. I mean, the urgency starts, though. If they draft Bedard, well, now all of a sudden, we're going to build it the right way. We're going to do this. You got to go out and spend some money. And if you have the opportunity to maybe go out and pay a Timo Meier, a very good player, you know, and start adding to this mix, and maybe, Kane doesn't want to go anywhere, and maybe he's around, and you get him at a decent number, and he's 100%, or you're sure that he could be 100% with his hip. And maybe Taves doesn't want to go. Now, all of a sudden, you've got a guy that is going to get a lot of headlines in Bedard. You need to spend some money. You come in with some players, get some players on defense, and you could start building some momentum here. It's still going to take a while. They might not make the playoffs. I'm not saying that. But at least you have something to look forward to. If you don't get Bedard, then the luck comes into play more so.
Well, I mean, the other thing, too, is Bedard and how – maybe the Blackhawks internally are justifying this tank is because, he's such an incredible talent that, I mean, right off the bat, he's worth a minimum of $100 million a year to your organization in revenue. I mean, his first three years, I mean, he's worth anywhere from $300 to $500 million over 3 years to whatever organization that drafts him, specifically if it's a big market town. And in that time, he's going to make in NHL money? He's going to make $10 million? Like, so, yeah. I mean, this is a chance for the PA. Like, if a team like Columbus or something drafted, like, if that's how the thing fell, I would love for Bedard to be the guy that says, fuck that, I'm not going there, and stood up for himself. I mean, it just doesn't happen in hockey. You know, like to pull an Eric Lindros, it just doesn't happen. You know, but like I was talking to somebody the other day, and it's like if I was Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves, but Kane more so. I mean, it doesn't happen, but I would have just if I would have looked at what the Blackhawks were doing, and I'm sitting there and I'm Kane, I would say screw this, trade me, and I wouldn't even report into this nonsense. But that doesn't happen in hockey. I mean, because you're supposed to be quiet, be a good old country boy, and you know you do all sorts of nasty things behind the scenes, but you know you front and center. You're a wholesome, friendly, you know, hockey guy.
Well, you know what I wanted to do though is unless you got something you want to really talk about next is the other thing is the perception. If you get Bedard, all of a sudden you become maybe the destination that you were 7 years ago, maybe not to that status, but you become more of a destination. You know, you don't have to rely on getting players who basically, you could pay them $500,000 more a year and they come because they're not getting many offers, or they marry a girl from Chicago, Jake McCabe, and he wants to come here. You know, you're going to be more of a destination as long as the perception around the league is that you treated Kane and Taves right, whether they're here or not. Because I think people don't realize that everyone's kind of watching, and hockey it's cloistered. It's different. To win 3 Stanley Cups, those guys, it may not be my particularly, you know, like they're in my high regard for athletes or people or whatever their personalities are, forget all that. But they're in extremely high regard amongst players who play and other organizations from the standpoint that that's rare air. That doesn't happen. And if I think if this is done the right way and they get lucky enough to get Bedard, you kind of fast forward things because now you're going to be able to get talent in here. And let's face it, you could talk about draft picks, and draft picks are great. Prospects are great. They've got one, as far as I could tell, Ian Mitchell, I don't know what that kid's head's got to be spinning like a top. But the only person I see, or the only player I see that's young, that looks like a really legit NHL player, is Lucas Reichel. So, I mean, the cupboard is still really empty. And, you know, if you get Bedard, that changes the scenario here. And all of a sudden, there's going to be more a different type of pressure on Kyle Davidson and the organization because they're going to be expected to be better sooner.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it would be in some ways it would be the best thing for the organization if they are that way. And if they wind up with the fourth, fifth pick, I mean, we're going to go through this whole thing again next year because there is no sense of urgency and I don't know.
Even second and third.
I referenced something earlier. We have to get to some other things. You had asked me when we were talking not long ago, and I remember this as two players. But basically, you had asked me what is the Blackhawks' record when Seth Jones and Tyler Johnson are both in and out of the lineup. And now you may have said another player. Okay.
Those two. Oh, I put in McCabe too, but those two players are the most significant.
Okay. Well, McCabe's played every game but the first three. And
yes, but then he was right. I should have said when McCabe's been teamed with Seth Jones, but that's what I meant. But when Seth Jones and Tyler Johnson haven't been injured.
Okay. So Seth Jones and Tyler Johnson both have been in the lineup in the same game 22 times this year. Okay. The Blackhawks' record when they're both in the lineup is 11-11.
Okay.
When they're both out of the lineup, which was 10 games, October 30th to November 20th, they were 2-6-1-1.
Okay.
That's what I thought.
I didn't know, but
that was the beginning of that 23 game stretch. November 14th. So the tail end of that 10-game stretch, let's see here, the last three games of that is the beginning of the 23-game stretch where they won two games. So
right. I didn't know what it was, but I knew it was a significant difference. And my point being is, not to justify what I guessed at in the beginning or said, injuries are going to happen. But when they happen to those two guys, Tyler Johnson can't stay healthy for more than 10 games, it seems like. When it happens to those guys, those because they're so thin, those are very significant. Obviously, Seth Jones plays so many minutes, right? So
Tyler Johnson, he sort of balances out that forward group.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah,
Right. And it makes a big difference losing one player when you don't have anyone like that could replace him. But the point is, you brought up about how this has gone, you know, really as well as they could expect. Yeah, because think about it. If those guys wouldn't have been hurt as much, we'd be hoping to be in the bottom five.
Right. I mean, it's very
significant.
Yeah, it's pretty possible. Yeah. Well, and now you already have, you know, like we talked about on the last podcast, I'm pretty sure, and if we didn't, I'll make the point you and I have been talking about. This whole tank thing is going to get a lot worse. The perception of it, people talking about it, like that game against Colorado when Colorado tied the game, I want to say. Yeah, Colorado tied the game in the third period on a disputed goal. And Luke Richardson challenged it. Now, it was a good challenge. It was, I mean, it was iffy. It was an iffy challenge. It really was like it could have gone either way, but it ended up going the Blackhawks' way. But it was a rough challenge because had the goal been, stood, then Colorado was going to get a power play late in the third period, and then they could have went up a goal at that point.
Yeah.
It all worked out. But if that same situation happens in March,
right?
People are going to be what are people going to think? They're going to be like, oh, he's in on the tank, right? Like he took a risk because he's in on the stuff like that is going to keep happening. And now you have
and
this
there's too many teams that are close. There's too many teams that are close to him that could justify playing young players. Right? You know, it's the way. Let's face it. This kid's a generational player. Unless he suffers an injury, or you know, he's the greatest con artist in the world, which he isn't. He does things that other players can't do, and it isn't because he's of age or older. He's actually younger. It makes it even more special, and he's not dominant physically, like size wise.
If Bedard broke his leg on May 30th, I'm still using the number one pick to draft him, and you know whatever day the draft is in June, it's that drastic of a difference of him versus everybody else, and some of that is because of just how good he is. Fantilli will be a fine player probably, Carlson probably, Mitch Goff we'll see, looks like going to be a really good player. Everybody else I don't know. And everybody's saying, well, you're still going to have the third pick. You just traded the third pick, you know, Kirby Dach. And, like, Blackhawks fans can't wait to pile on him and how, you know, like, nothing is a for sure.
No.
But the other thing I want to point out is now we have the situation where because you've left Kane and Taves to the end, now fans are starting – that resentment is starting to build towards these guys. Well, what if these guys don't waive their trade clause? Like, because I saw a couple of people are like, wow, they don't – when the report – Jeff Merrick reported that mid-February is when they're all sit down and Taves and Kane will tell Davidson what they're willing to do. Well, you know, the reaction was, well, that doesn't give Kyle Davidson a lot of time. And it's like we're already this resentment. I hate this that they've done this to these guys, that people are going to start resenting them for not waiving their no trade soon enough. And if a trade doesn't happen, people are going to be mad at those guys, not the front office and the ownership that put them in this position. When you start backwards.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. First off, it may have been awkward. It could have led to the wrong perception to the public. It would have cost them money with ticket sales. But they could have had a conversation, and the conversation could have been simply this. And Kane and Taves could have both been there at the same time because you didn't need an answer then, but you'd like an answer, you know, 3 weeks before the draft. You could have did it a week after the season ended. You could have said just like this, listen, you see the situation here, we got to get better. We've chosen to take this path. Everybody that I could trade to make the team better, I'm going to trade. Now, you don't need to have to stamp it on their forehead. There's one player that jumps off the map. The only player that he could trade without permission that would bring back a bounty was the Brinkett. Now, if they heard that, maybe they would go back to him and say, well, you know, maybe it's time. He didn't do that. That didn't happen. I told you about that clip the other day with Charlie Romeliotis with the Taves interview. It struck me, and I think it's worth bringing up. When they asked him about his situation, he said, well, you know, conflicted this and that. I'm paraphrasing. But he used the word reset. He didn't use the word rebuild. He used the word reset, meaning that there seems to be kind of that impression that they want to clean out what was here and start all over. That's reset. rebuild. You don't have to do that. The Kings didn't do that. They kept Doughty. They kept Kopitar. The Penguins are in a state where they make the playoffs. They can't win in, the playoffs, but they've made the playoffs. The Bruins, those teams kept the elite players that they had in place. So all of this could have been done differently. It wasn't, for whatever reason, not blaming Kyle Davidson, let's say, but organizationally, it wasn't done, in my view, in the best way. So all they have to do is he needs to ask them for a list of teams they would accept the trade to. They don't have to cozy up or anything else. They don't owe the Hawks anything. And to be honest with you, ownership does a lot of things for players, a lot of good things that you and I maybe never hear about till well after the fact, and they're treated well. But one, in some respects, they're not treated well when they're going out the door. Okay, there isn't a lot of, oh, you know, we should tell him what's going on, or, you know, we want to make sure that he lands in the right spot. Corey Crawford was in the minors for almost 5 years, missed the Stanley Cup, the first Stanley Cup, only because of a contractual thing. I didn't see one person who watched every training camp practice that was there told me, said that Niemi was the better goalie. So he, you know, he went back to the minors. He came up, he kept his mouth shut, and they knew he was going to be good. They didn't know how good he was going to be, and he turned into being a really good goaltender, an underrated goaltender. But when it was time for him to go, Stan Bowman didn't have him over for dinner and talk about it a few months before. He waited to the very last minute and caught the guy with his pants down. He didn't know he wasn't going to come back. He was almost – he thought for sure he was going to work out a deal and come back. My point is, ownership isn't nice. It is what it is, and a lot of times it's about money. Boudreaux's situation, I heard months ago, the reason he wasn't going to get fired sooner, even though you knew the handwriting was on the wall when they only did the extension for a year and did that for him, and how he didn't know that, I don't know, but he was probably thinking he could turn it around anyway. The only reason he wasn't fired sooner, really, was because they were already paying two coaches. I knew they were paying one, but they were paying two coaches. So every week that he stayed was a less amount of money that the ownership had to pay three coaches, because they were already paying two and him, that's three. So when he got fired, now it's going to be four. So they would be paying three coaches who aren't coaching their salaries. So this stuff about, you know, oh, they need to do this for Kyle, or, you know, they need to let the Blackhawks know. No, they don't have to do anything. They just need to do what they're asked. And maybe they go, maybe they don't want to go. And if they don't want to go, they shouldn't be vilified for it.
Yeah, I mean, they don't owe the Blackhawks anything. And I do a couple of things. One of the interesting things going forward is going to be what happens with Phil Kuryshev. Because, you know, the Blackhawks, we assume, are going to have to spend a lot of money in the offseason, okay? Philip Kuryshev, of everybody on this roster, is probably the guy that you would say, all right, who's somebody that you can keep and you could, you know, he could be a player for you going forward. The guy right now that I think most people would point to would be Phil Kuryshev, that's on the NHL roster today. He's interesting.
I've always kind of liked him.
He's grown on me a little.
He's an NHL player now,
but okay. My point here is he's arbitration eligible, which is always in the past has always been a problem with the Blackhawks. He is an RFA, and the Hawks need to spend a lot of money. So this is the most interesting thing. Once we get into the summer outside of the draft is how do they approach this? Because I'm not sure that he's any more than what he is right now. He could be, he could get a little bit better, but I think most people would be really comfortable with him at like $3 million or so. But if they shoot a little bit higher because they need to spend money, and then he doesn't, like, I guess the most interesting thing to me would be the term. Because if they overpay him because they sort of have to, because they need to get to the lower limit, then that may make him untradeable. But if he
that's
is
what
untradeable,
they have to lock up. Right.
Yeah. Like
that point.
But if he's only
and on the other side of the coin, Chris, you bring that up is very good because then they're untradeable. So in other words, that's poor evaluation, okay, and overpaying because you could. On the other side of the coin is when you get rid of a player, Brandon Hagel, who was going to get better in my view, and you handed a reasonable amount of money. Both hurt you, and they can't afford those mistakes. Those are interesting things. I think, you know, if you look at – we got a couple minutes or no?
Yeah, we got some time.
Like, if you look at – and here's where I'm saying, like, you know, you're relying on some luck. If you go back to last year's draft, the difference, the second and third players picked were Simon Nemec and Logan Cooley. Okay? That's in the 22 draft. If you go back to the year before, the 21 draft, the second and third are Matty Beniers, who maybe the could be the best player coming out of that draft, and Mason McTavish. Now, McTavish, I think, is a pretty decent player, but, you know, could be. But, I mean, there's a big difference is my point. Now, here's the one that's kind of striking. And so far it looks like the Kings bit the tamale here. Quentin Byfield looked the part. Okay? He was picked second. Stutzel, for Ottawa, was picked third. I think if that was rerun today, there'd be no doubt Stutzel will go before Byfield. Byfield has turned into a project. And so that's where I'm trying to say, you know, you after this kid Bedard, who's an exception, then it becomes a question of getting lucky and not making a mistake. Now you're asking the team that's had problems making right decisions with players in the draft and who has had a world of problems developing to do the right thing here. And then I get pushback from some people, like, you know, on Twitter, the ones that want to answer, but it's like, they're like, yeah, but the analytical team, you know, everything is much better. I don't know what's much better than it was the previous year. It's different people, but who has a resume that you would say, yeah, things are going to be really good because they added this guy to the scouting department, or, you know, they've given this guy a position.
Scouting and development is largely the same. I mean, the people at the top, Bowman, McIsaac, Mark Kelly, they're gone. But the
right.
Actual staffs are
mostly
the same. People
underneath them that they basically either trained or oversaw or ran are there. So, you know, like I hear analytics and I have no problem with analytics. I'm basically a numbers guy. I was a trader for a long time, but there's so much more involved in the analytics. There's so many variables. John Chyka, he had the analytical staff leads. The Coyotes thought he was, I mean, he came out, he's going to rewrite the way, you know, the way he was almost like an Epstein was in baseball, you know. He's going to rewrite the way that hockey deals with analytics, and he's going to take this team, and he's going to show everyone. What did he do? He embarrassed himself, and it didn't work well for the Coyotes at all. And then when he left them and went out the door, they were heavily fined because they broke a rule that no one should – it was an obvious rule that no one would think of breaking, was the combine rule that he got fined. So what I'm saying is that you can only put so much in analytics. You need to be able to see and develop, because one scout told me this years ago, and it's true, and I've said it before, and I can't say it any more succinctly. Everyone, when it comes to young players, especially guys that are just getting into the AHL or go there straight from the draft, Everyone is watching the same movie. It's all who figures out the end first. And that's why those scouts are there. The amateur scouts or the AHL scouting, what they're doing is they're looking for pretenders or the real deal. And they're waiting for an organization to cast aside someone who they think is the real deal. And if they hold on to those that become pretenders in the end, then you don't get anything for them, which the Hawks have been notorious for. So I can't get more optimistic about the team until I see that change, that dynamic change. And I would hope they somehow get Bedard, because I think that will fast forward things and will allow them to maybe get some ready-made NHL players in here and build some winning culture for these teams and redo their defense a bit and go out and sign a goaltender or whatever. It'll put more onus on them to be a winning team rather than to be stuck. You know, the Buffalo Sabres, what did they pick in the first round, in the top 10? What was it, 9 years in a row? I mean, not good when that happens.
I know you have to drop in a few minutes, and I'll talk about Joey Z after you have to drop.
Oh, go ahead.
But I want to say a few things. I mean, again, for me, it all comes down to development. No one should be making an argument, because I see these things like online where there's bad. I think either bad comprehension or bad faith agitators that say, well, for the people that didn't think the Blackhawks had to rebuild, no one's saying the Blackhawks didn't need to rebuild. It's just about how are you going about it, and like in practice, how is it going to work? Has anyone asked the question, if Lucas Reichel was your top forward prospect and he spent a year in Rockford with Anders Sorensen, and then Kyle Davidson says he's not ready, he's got to go back and do more. Did anyone ever ask the question, is Anders Sorensen the right guy if he spent a year and a half with your top forward prospect and that player, Lucas Reichel, is still not ready? Is he the right guy? No one's asked that question. Now, I don't know if he's the right guy or not. I'm not attacking Anders Sorensen. I'm asking the question because it's sitting there right in front of you. Why is this guy?
Management thinks he's the right guy. Management thinks he's the right guy because they kind of embarrassed themselves what they did with Derek King.
Well,
I mean, most organizations would have thrown him in the situation that he was thrown into. Many organizations would have said, well, you have a job here if this doesn't work. Instead, he's on the coaching staff. I mean, maybe it's what he wanted and better for him. But, I mean, they basically put him in a position where if for whatever reason Richardson didn't want him, which wouldn't happen with a rookie coach, and they know that, they could force a guy on him, and they did, maybe. Or maybe he really likes King, but they put King in a very awkward position. I think it's because they were really sold on Sorensen, or you would think so.
You
would think so.
By the way, I talked about Yannick Perreault. Yannick Perreault, who's got four kids. His daughter plays college at Mercyhurst. She's actually a pretty good player that I've heard of. I can't say that I know that off first.
Funny thing about Yannick Perreault is, though, he's been here for how long? Okay, we know that he was a mission guy, Stan Bowman, all the tie-ins.
He's been here for 10 years.
Yeah, okay, 10 years. In 10 years, Max Domi, I don't know, maybe I'll give him credit for Max Domi. He's at 55% on his draw still, which I find pretty impressive. I could count the people on one hand that take a significant amount of faceoffs that were like 50% or more.
Well, we focus
except for Jonathan Tate.
Perreault's also supposed to be helping with like positional awareness, spatial awareness, defensive zone coverage. I mean, he's supposed to be helping with all that too. And you know, so we could keep going on and on and on. But I do want to make the point, because we talked about the draft, we talked about Yannick Perreault. Yannick Perreault's youngest son, I believe, is an NHL. He's eligible for the 2023 draft, and he's projected to go in the 20s. So, if the Hawks have a pick in the 20s, I would put money on that. I mean, he's a forward, and he's a pretty good forward. Obviously, he's projected high in a supposedly really well thought of draft, but that could happen there. And if you're looking for Stan Bowman, he's actually been at the Fifth Third Arena recently because his son still plays for the Mission.
Okay, if I want to bump into him, I'll have to hang there. Kirby Dach played 23 minutes and 59 seconds last night. More than any other forward or defenseman, including Suzuki. And this guy, Jordan Decker, I don't know. He must be just a fan. He's, you know, bragging about how well he's played. So that's an interesting one, too. 8 points in the last 9 games for Dach.
With Kirby Dach, I think it was the best thing for him to get out of Chicago. I'm not going to sit here and argue that he should still be on the Blackhawks. I think it was sort of a relationship
right.
that had gone sour. He needed a change of scenery. But it's just the point that these guys don't even – I mean, he's third overall pick. There's some talent there. He just wasn't putting it all together. You could look at Kevin Korchinski. Kevin Korchinski, if you watch that World Junior, did not play that great. Nobody does well. He's a great passer. He skates very well with the puck. We know what he doesn't do well. He doesn't have a great shot, and defensively he's not any good. So those things have to be developed in order for him to be what the Blackhawks want him to be. Can they develop those things? Does he do them on his own without their help? You know, can they help him develop those things? And ultimately, will he be what they need him to be? Frankie Nazar has one leg. Like,
well, that's the problem with this. You know, they reached for him too.
There's some people that thought like in that area, but there was differing opinions. The problem with Nazar and the thing is with kids like him, and he could be excellent. I don't know. None of us know. But the thing with him is a lot of these kids that are really fast skaters, like they didn't develop other skills because they overcompensated for everything else with speed. He had great speed, and he's highly regarded stick handler from the 2022 draft. So he has those things, but he's not good defensively. He wasn't. So he's going to have to develop these other skills. These guys aren't slam dunks, and it's going to take time. The guy that's most interesting to me is the Sam Renzel kid who's still in the USHL.
Yeah.
I think he's going to Minnesota next year. He'll be a freshman. That he's got all the skills, but he hasn't played college hockey yet. So it's like a lot of these things take time, and you just never know. You hope that they work out. I would love to see, as somebody that pays to see this crap, would love to see more exciting competitive hockey. You know, but
that kid's got a good personality. I wasn't disappointed in trading Dach, but I mean, again, they got to get lucky with what, you know, what they had. I mean, Central's at 21, but you know, they're not always right. You know, they're not always right with the North American skaters, but like you say, this is very hush hush. And I know there's HIPAA things and everything else, but I mean, I hope to me, it's like almost ominous when you hear his coach talking about, well, you know, we have to worry about the next 10, 15 years and getting his head right and this and that. I mean, Jesus, how major of an injury was that? It must have been an ACL or whatever, but I mean, you know, if he loses a step and a half, he could be a different player. Not saying that he won't be an NHL player, and maybe he could just wind up being as good someday. It's got to be a big change because that was by far his strong suit in handling the puck, right? So, I don't know. You don't hear much in the way of details on any of this stuff, so we'll just have to wait and see.
All right. You got to go?
I got another 10 minutes if you want to take it. If you want to rattle through some papers and do something.
You touched on the Boudreaux Canucks. I just want to add one thing. And it's along the same lines of what you just said. I don't see why it was such a big deal. It's a shame to an extent that it played out in public, but yeah. The reason why it played out in public is that Jim Rutherford was asked a question and he answered it honestly. And now people are all mad at him. Like, it's sort of weird. People were pissed off that he was like, he just answered a question truthfully. And, oh, I feel so bad for Bruce Boudreau. Don't feel bad for Bruce Boudreau. Like, he's still getting paid. And I'm sure he'll slide right into a studio somewhere real soon.
He's very good at that.
I mean,
you know,
the
thing about him, though, is he's a guy that'll have a beer with reporters. He'll talk to everyone. He's a gregarious guy. He's a nice guy. And he gets the benefit of the doubt in a lot of respects. But if you look a little closer, he's a good rah-rah guy, motivational guy, give guys space, know how to talk to him. He's not an X and O's guy. He needs good assistance. I mean, so there's reason for skepticism. And his Game 7 record at home in the playoffs is astronomically horrible. It's almost defies probability of how many Game 7s he's lost. But he's won a lot of games. He's had some good teams. He's had a lot to do with it. But in my view, he is overrated and puffed up because he's just a nice guy. And he was on NHL radio. He was on NHL Network. He knows who to talk to if he wants to get a story out there. Okay? So, you know, I think he's excellent. He would be excellent taking Rick Tocchet's job TSS. I would like to see that. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to happen. But he's a very good analyst. He's glib. He has a story to back it up. You know, he makes it interesting. But in any event, so yeah,
Better in sound bites, but he's a very likable guy, and you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he should be.
He's an underperforming coach too.
Listen to him. Huh?
He's an underperforming coach too. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I just don't. It's so strange to me what people get all riled up and upset about. Like that to me, that you don't get upset about. The other thing too.
We're in a time that you want to pause, right? I mean, there's always someone that seems to want to defend something or somebody. But I mean, in reality, I mean, he signed up for what happened. I mean, he evidently thought he could turn it around. He thought he could turn it around.
Dennis Savard. Blackhawks fans, they're all like, I hope the Hawks destroy the whatever they were saying, because the Hawks obviously were Rick Tocchet's debut game. And I didn't watch the game at all, but I saw that the Blackhawks got fucking smoked, right, all game long.
Well, it was close for a while.
Okay,
go ahead.
Well, but play, like, game-wise, it wasn't, like, it was never in doubt.
No.
My understanding. Anyway, Dennis Savard. The same thing happened to Dennis Savard. He started the season. McDonough didn't have the courage to just fire him on the spot. They were looking for a reason. They hired Joe Quenneville, who was sitting there waiting. It's just that back then, nobody was paying attention to the Blackhawks. It wasn't a big story. If that thing would have happened now, it would have been a much bigger story, and Savard would have been probably much more sympathetic. But it's the same thing.
Yeah, Callan didn't want to do it, really, but, you know, because he picked him and he gave him a chance or whatever. But, I mean, Dennis Savard, in my view, he's a fun guy to be around. He's a likable guy. He's very good with people. He doesn't have his nose up in the air. A lot of good things from that standpoint. But has anyone approached him to be a coach of anything since then? I mean, maybe he's chosen and just wasn't right for him, but, I mean – you know, and to show you what type of guy he is, he did come back and he was around. The difference between him and Quenneville was the difference between night and day. You know, I mean, so I can't. It's the night he got fired was interesting. Scotty Bowman was on either in between periods or after the game. And he was kind of pumping up Savard, you know, in some respects. And you knew that he had to be influential or at least gave his opinion on Quenneville because he was the consultant back then, which he was up until just a little while ago, I guess. It was interesting because you would have never thought that Savard was going to get fired that night, but it wasn't a shock.
My whole point is, though, Blackhawks fans, oh, how could they treat Bruce Boudreau like this? Your own fucking team did it to Dennis Savard. How soon we forget. Very quickly before
guys,
we have to...
The same guy that cried about Bruce Boudreau, who probably have never met him or know what he's like personally,
Yeah. They're
going to be the ones that are going to be, if by chance, Kane and Taves or one or the other says, no, I'll write it out this year. We'll see how the draft goes, and then I'll decide my own future. Oh, wait till you see, okay? The hypocrisy, okay?
Oh,
you talk about those guys who built the organization and did something that probably may never happen again, three cups in that short of a period.
Well, that and, I mean, it's complicated now because the way they've done this is because if San Jose chooses to trade Teemu Meyer, well, then he's I mean, it's that trade that will set the market. You know, maybe Carolina would look at Kane and think that that's the guy now that Max Pacioretty's out and they have the cap space. But, I mean, Meyer is going to be the one that would be the top of everybody's list who's looking for a scoring forward, not Kane. So – you're not.
He's got 28 goals and 48 points in 49 games.
Yeah, he's the guy, and there's going to be more because, like, in another week or two from now, that Eastern Conference, there's only 9 or maybe 10 teams that are really playoff teams. The rest of them are gonna just give up because, you know, why not? Like, why not get in the lottery this year? Like that's the problem with this being the year to tank is everybody's gonna be like, well, fuck it. Like if we have a 6% chance of getting Bedard, it's worth it. Like so,
yeah,
there's gonna be
get a chance, give ourselves the best chance of whatever that might be.
It's a buyer's market
to get them. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
And I mean, the commissioner was on again saying what he always says. You know, he always defends everything that he's in. He defends the sport to the hilt. There's no one's going to tank. So, in other words, the NHL's not going to accuse anyone of tanking because they just fixed the rules, changed the weighting and everything else because they wanted to be above all that. So they're
well,
not going
to. The thing that he said that was like I laughed at. He's like, "Well, the lottery's
right.
The place to prevent teams from tanking." It's like it works the opposite way. The lottery creates opportunity. Like it just opens the door for more people to just throw in the towel earlier in the season, because why not? And it's become acceptable. The fans are allowing this to go on. Because they're brainwashed into thinking that this is the way you got to do it. And that's one of the more frustrating things. Before we go, we only have a couple minutes left. I do want to update. So Joe Jacek, the former Rockford IceHogs play-by-play guy and their media relations front office guy, talked about it on the last podcast. He was fired. No one's talked about this. No one's written about this. I don't know why. Joey's a really nice guy. I like Joey. I don't know him that well, and I haven't been out in Rockford in 3 years or so. But nice guy. I always was fine, you know, had a fine time dealing with him. As I said on the last podcast, Joey was – something happened. I don't know what happened. Something happened. He was suspended the last week of October. He was fired by the Blackhawks on November 4th, I think, was whatever that Friday was. And – Joey went and put a statement out basically saying his time, a very bland statement about his time with the organization was over with. And in the last podcast, I kind of went off on a rant about no one's asking any questions about this. So I continued to ask questions about it. And the part of the story is no one will talk about what happened, But I did get a statement, well, off the record, from a Blackhawks executive that it was an internal matter and it was really unfortunate. So that's what I got. I asked directly a couple of times if there's an NDA, there's an agreement. You know, obviously there's some degree of an agreement not to talk about it. But I asked if there's an NDA, and I didn't get a response to that question. So that doesn't mean that there is, but obviously there's an agreement on both parties to not discuss what happened. That makes me a little itchy, but it's not like, my understanding is it's not like he's completely off limits or anything. He's still in touch with some people that he used to work with on the team and in the front office, and I think they go out and stuff, but I don't know what that means.
But prior in early November, that's an itchy situation to start. I mean, what you,
right? And my understanding too is that Joey, like whatever happened, it was not expected. He felt blindsided by it, I guess, and it totally was not something that he was expecting, and that. But that's all. That's all I know. I don't know what happened. I wish I did, because I wish that I could say one way or another whether this is something that should be alarming, or it's just, you know, he had a bad day at the office and got in an argument with somebody and they sent him home. I don't know. Like, and I don't think it's good for his future that there's this, you know, I mean, it's unfortunate because it happens in the context of it's under the umbrella of the Chicago Blackhawks and what's happened with the Blackhawks recently. It's unfortunate. You can't like really ignore that part of it, even though there may be no relation at all, you know, with, you know, him and prior things of controversies with the Blackhawks. And my guess is that it's not that serious of a thing, but I don't know. But that's what happened. So internal matter, really unfortunate, but the Blackhawks have washed their hands of him. He's gone. He was fired. And that's where that was. So, Al, thank you very much. We ran a little long, but I think we got to some of the things that we wanted to talk about, and we should do another one of these soon. I would love to do it every week, but getting us in the same frequency at the same time has been an issue.
Yeah, it's we're on different schedules. Let's just say that.
All right, Al.
Thanks
very much.
Put it, Chris?
Yeah. Thanks everybody for listening.
Nicest way to put it.
Well, you are always framing things in the best possible light. That's why I appreciate you, Al.
That's what I'm known for. That's one of the many things. That's right. And it's a good time to stop now on that note.
Thanks everybody for listening. We will hopefully catch you pretty soon. Good night, everybody.